Hi, thanks for tuning in to season 5 of the Aced It podcast, where we translate science into sense so you can learn about research in the justice and health fields without having to read a lengthy journal article or report. This season, we're trying something new: interviews. In each episode, you'll hear from top experts working on research within the JCOIN network. I'm so excited. It's like you get a glimpse behind the scenes with these fascinating folks as they talk about what they're learning, the struggles they faced in their projects, and what amazing findings they have so far. Findings that will surely make a difference in the lives of so many. It's almost too good to be true. So with that, I'm Danielle Rudes, your host, coming to you from Sam Houston State University in Texas. With ACEit, I do most of the work for you. All you have to do is listen. ACEit is a cool and super helpful product brought to you by the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. For more info, check out jcoinctc.org. Now, let's get started. Hey, thanks for joining us on the ACEit podcast. And today, I am so excited to introduce you to Dr. Talisa Carter. I'm going to let Talisa introduce herself because she has a bunch of affiliations and she's like super famous. But I wanted to just say thank you, Talisa, for coming today. Talisa is not only my colleague and fellow researcher on JCOIN, but she is also my friend. So Talisa, take it away.
My name is Talisa J. Carter. I'm an assistant professor in the Department of Justice, Law, and Criminology at The American University in Washington, D.C. I'm also a non-residence fellow at the Brookings Institute, an affiliate scholar at the Urban Institute, and a faculty affiliate at the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence at George Mason University.
Okay, thanks, Talisa, for that great introduction. I want to ask you, of course, about your current study. I hear you are doing some amazing things and making really interesting data come to life.
Currently, I'm working on a study that I've called All In. And the purpose of this study is to see employee buy-in, particularly employees who are working with justice-involved populations. And these clients have opioid disorder or struggle with opioid addiction, but they're also entwined with the system, the criminal justice system. So what my study looks at is, hey, are these employees, whether they're security staff or medical professionals, do they actually believe that what they're doing is going to work? Are they bought into the mission of the program?
Any challenges so far that you want to talk about?
Really excited about buy-in. But the problem is that when I tried to collect data, particularly interviews online, I got a whole bunch of fraudulent responses. People who said that they worked with individuals that were justice involved and struggling with opioid misuse and disorder, but in reality, they had no idea what was going on. And maybe they just kind of had the time to be fake, or they just wanted the compensation that I was offering to do these interviews. But nevertheless, I got a bunch of fraudulent interviews. So then I had what most researchers would call bad data. A whole bunch of data that I realized really didn't apply to my project. But instead of seeing that as just kind of a waste and just something that's unfortunate, I decided to try to make a study out of that, right? To make lemonade from these lemons. And so the research question that I looked at with my team is, how exactly can qualitative researchers identify fraudulent virtual interviews?
Wow. Oh my gosh, that's super interesting. Tell me more, so much more. I want all the goods.
So to answer this research question, we analyzed the data that we collected from these fraudulent respondents. The data were Zoom interviews. So they're qualitative, they had video and audio, and we analyzed them in the qualitative software program in Vivo. We analyzed transcripts, and we also took a look at backgrounds, right? Because we had the visual information. So we analyzed and coded this data to look for emerging themes or patterns that were similar in responses and maybe even visual patterns across these fraudulent responses.
Oh gosh, what a great idea. I can't believe what you're doing with this study so far. What about COVID? So it sounds like you were doing online virtual interviews. Did COVID have any role in how you approached the study?
It's really interesting to think about COVID in the context of trying to identify fraudulent qualitative virtual interviews, because COVID has made virtual data collection far more common. Just like we kind of work in this hybrid virtual world, this model, so too does researchers. We've adapted and we've started collecting even more data in the virtual setting. And while it might seem weird that people would spend parts of their day lying, right, and trying to do these interviews and take surveys when in reality they aren't a part of the sample, fraud does happen. It is common. And so it's really become even more important post-COVID to learn how to identify them. So what COVID does for this study, or if you think about COVID in the context of this study, really it makes our research question even more relevant to scholars today.
Okay, now I need the findings right away. I want to know what your team found.
So first, something that's really kind of witty but also sad is the way we've categorized these fraudulent interviews. So they are essentially what we call sad data. So either they're spam interviews that we caught and we said, hey, no, this doesn't seem real. You don't seem like you actually are a valid person that could qualify for our sample. And then we have attempted interviews where people attempted, they tried to do the interview, but we caught them in the middle of an interview or during the interview process. And we said, hey, you know, you actually don't qualify. And then there are deceived interviews where the person actually did go through the entire interview process and they were compensated. And so they deceived us. They successfully deceived us. And so spam interviews, attempted interviews, and deceived interviews, we use the acronym SAD data. And so what we found, right, these themes and patterns that emerge is that SAD respondents, they didn't have the same knowledge as valid respondents. So we would ask questions like, can you describe what you do day to day? And they'd kind of just make something up, right? Oh, I check on my patients, like very vague, generic responses. And then language was also a theme that emerged. So a lot of times, instead of referring to their clients as clients, they use stigmatizing language, right? So again, the study tried to look at justice-involved populations. So fraudulent interviewees were much more likely to say, inmates this, right? Or prisoners that, where people who were actually valid medical and security professionals would use more respectful language like client, resident, incarcerated person, etc. And lastly, the final theme that came up in the SAD data was the importance of technology. So oftentimes, the fraudulent interviews of these SAD cases, they would have really spotty Wi-Fi, they would be resistant to turn their camera on when requested, etc. So those are the three things that kind of are super interesting we found so far.
Okay. Now that you got a handle on what you think the findings are, what does this all mean? What can we learn from what you learned?
So the practical implications of our study is to really be able to give qualitative researchers a tool, empirically sound evidence that says, hey, it's okay to question the validity of virtual respondents. It's okay to make something from your bad data, right? Even if you do have fraudulent responses, how to turn it around. We give these suggestions for how to turn it around in the article that I hope you guys read. So it's really important in context to make the most of data, whether they're fraudulent or valid, and learn from our experiences so we can move science forward.
Dr. Talisa Carter, researcher extraordinaire and lemonade maker, or maybe it's sad lemonade maker. Thank you so much with all my heart for being on the ACETIP podcast, for the amazing work that you're doing and the people that you're working with. I am eternally grateful. Thank you so much for joining us on ACETIP.
Thank you to Danielle. Thanks so much for having me on. To everybody involved in the ACETIP podcast. To JCoin, who have been like an invaluable network to move me forward as a scholar. To NIDA for funding and also their invaluable mentorship and interactions. And the All-In team, because they're a group of students from the American University who have worked on this project diligently, and I really appreciate their efforts. And lastly, believe it or not, I want to thank those SAD respondents, right? The people that gave me fraudulent data, because again, without the lemons, how can we make lemonade?
That wraps another episode of the ACEDIT podcast. We thank you for listening to ACEDIT, where we translate science into sense. Also, remember, you can find one-page summary overviews written in plain language for all of the research we cover on this podcast on our website, jcoinctc.org. Our conveniently packaged research summaries may help you remember what you heard here, and they will help you translate this research to your staff, friends, students, or colleagues. ACEDIT is part of the NIDA-funded Justice Community Opioid Innovation Network, or JCOIN, through the Coordination and Translation Center, CTC, housed at the Center for Advancing Correctional Excellence, ACE, at George Mason University. Tune in again for more science and more sense with ACEDIT.